It's time for the wonderful world of Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, the food maverick, the food magician, the food mensch. Arthur.
I like being a mensch.
I like mensch, too. Yeah. I don't think enough people...
The strict definition of mensch is person. But it doesn't, in Yiddish, it means way more than that. It means, you know, a fully formed human being with empathy and a little bit of common sense.
It's a wonderful mensch is a wonderful thing, and yeah. Again, some definitions have been.
In that case, I'm going to do a very menschedich, that's the adjectival form, a subject, which is bread crumbs. I was going to say, don't get me started, but I'm already started on this. So how this happened, that my current, at the moment, obsession with breadcrumbs, I've had them before, by the way. In fact, when I was writing The Southern Italian Table, I said, maybe we should just call this book Breadcrumb Cuisine, because there's so many breadcrumbs here and there and everywhere in Southern Italian cooking. Let me say, one of the most popular items is baked clams, which are topped with breadcrumbs. So, in fact, they don't have... there's no such thing as baked clams that I've ever had in Italy, but they do have baked mussels, same exact thing, but made with mussels. The reason they don't have baked clams is because the clams in Southern Italy are very tiny, and you can't really stuff them. I mean, it's impractical. Anyway, back to the breadcrumbs themselves. Now, I have to say there is an obsession in America with something called panko, P-A-N-K-O, panko breadcrumbs. They're not for me. Here's why. Panko breadcrumbs, which are Japanese breadcrumbs, by the word, I don't know in Japanese what the real word for bread is, but panko is P-A-N for bread, and ko obviously, apparently, I should say, means crumbs. So it means breadcrumbs. Panko breadcrumbs are flakier than what I would call normal breadcrumbs, and they are made from a white bread that most frequently has sugar in the dough. So as a result, the breadcrumbs from this lightly sugared white bread brown faster than regular old breadcrumbs, which by my book should have no sugar. In fact, if you're going to buy breadcrumbs in the supermarket, look at the packages and do pick one that has no seasoning and no corn syrup. That is an ingredient I've seen on breadcrumbs, believe it or not. Now, so lightly sugared breadcrumbs, if it's made from lightly sugared bread, will brown quicker than a regular breadcrumb. So you have to keep that in mind. If all you have in your house right now is panko breadcrumbs and you want to use them up and you're going to use them in a recipe that calls for regular breadcrumbs, be aware that they will brown soon. That may be a good thing, by the way. That may turn out to be an advantage. But in my case, it's not. I have some panko here. I forget what it was I wanted to try the panko on, but I only have very little bit left, and I'm probably not going to buy them again. I do make my own breadcrumbs. I make it from very bland Brooklyn-baked Italian bread, which is to say a white bread. And it doesn't have such a strong crust on it that I have to cut crust off. You can make it into breadcrumbs with the crust on. What I do is, if I have a leftover baguette or whatever it is, I let it dry out in a paper bag. Don't put it in the refrigerator. It'll get moldy and stale earlier. No, you just want to let it dry out. And I never waste bread. I always have some dried bread around to make more breadcrumbs if I need them, but I buy them too. I buy them made from the same bakery that bakes the bread that I buy, that I make into breadcrumbs.
Arthur, I just want to say something that, you know, once a long time ago we talked breadcrumbs like this, and I was getting baguette from, and I can't, there's a pretty well-known bakery in New York, and I can't remember the name of it right now, but their baguettes were being brought up here, blah, blah, blah. I started making them into breadcrumbs, thinking, wow, I'm being really efficient. And I just have to say that the breadcrumbs were incredibly sweet, which you know is not my thing. It was just baguette.
And well, so, but who knows what was in that baguette?
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, if it's a bakery bread, I don't think they're required to divulge their ingredients.
Not. But my
breadcrumbs are from the absolute plainest bread you can imagine, just made from water, flour, yeast, and salt.
That's what I thought I was getting. I'm just saying that they were incredibly sweet.
Well, look, no matter what they are, you can still use them. Even if they're a little sweet, you know, maybe you want to, I don't know, make a cobbler. And use them for the top of cobbler. Yeah. I mean, I do use breadcrumbs for a lot of things, but what got me going on this little tangent of breadcrumbs in my life is the idea that I could make stuffed artichokes. I'm going to call them unstuffed artichokes. I think there's hardly a person who doesn't have fun eating a stuffed artichoke. You know, you have this bread stuffing, very well seasoned, between the petals of the artichoke, and you bite them off with some of the artichoke. It's delicious, but it's a fuss to make. Anyway, I've been buying, as I've mentioned many times on the air, these frozen artichoke hearts. The ones that I buy at Whole Foods are particularly good, but I think they're quite a few brands out there that are good. It's a good product in general. Artichoke hearts freeze very well. I defrost the artichoke hearts, and this was my idea of unstuffed artichokes. I arrange them in a baking dish with a little bit of oil tossed onto them, just not too much. A little bit of salt, not too much. And then I topped it with, a mixture of breadcrumbs. I happen to have a nice piece of pecorino, grated cheese, parsley, salt, and pepper, and garlic. Did I say garlic? So I minced the garlic. So for one 12-ounce package of artichokes, I mixed up one cup of breadcrumbs with a couple of cloves of minced garlic, a nice amount, let's say a quarter of a cup, at least, of finely chopped parsley, a teaspoon of salt, a couple of rounded tablespoons of pecorino. And actually, when we were eating this, I said, you know, I think next time I'm going to put in a little bit more cheese, maybe another tablespoon, and good amount of pepper, because we like pepper. Mix it all up. Oh, and oil. And then mix it all up with a couple of tablespoons, maybe even 3 tablespoons, of olive oil, and that'll make them really crunchy in the end. Sprinkle this over the top, evenly over the top of the artichokes. You can toss them a little bit so some of the breadcrumbs get to the bottom, and put that in a 400-degree oven for about 20 minutes. Now, we could not eat. This was, even for Bob and me who eat a ton of vegetables, this was too much artichokes for one meal. So I had leftovers, and I reheated them the next day. And you know what? I think we like the reheated version even better, because the breadcrumbs got even crunchier.
Right.
And, yeah.
Yeah.
The artichokes do not need any pre-cooking. I mean, once you've pre-frozen an artichoke heart, it doesn't need much more to make it really tender. So, but by the way, so in Southern Italian cooking, of which most of my cooking is, breadcrumbs play an important role, making something out of nothing. For instance, I just told you about the artichoke hearts. Well, there's something, after all. But how about mushrooms? Now, mushrooms, I learned 40 years ago when I went to Eastern Europe and discovered there was a whole mushroom cuisine in Lithuania and Latvia. Why? Because mushrooms are free. You just go into the woods and you gather them. I mean, you need somebody to help you identify the good ones as opposed to the poisonous ones. But beyond that, they're free. So there are a lot of mushroom dishes in Eastern Europe, and there are a lot of mushroom dishes in Southern Italy, because depending on what part of Southern Italy, there's always some special mushroom growing. Now, this is a way of cooking mushrooms that I've been doing this for a long time, and I still do it. especially if I see some mushrooms are on sale and I want to buy a load of mushrooms to cook, you know, sometimes the exotic mushrooms, I'll call them. They're not really wild, but exotic mushrooms. And you can take a pan full of these exotic mushrooms, toss them with salt, pepper, a little bit of olive oil. Actually, what I just do is I put some oil on the bottom of the dish, and then I put in the mushrooms and toss them around a bit, and then put a little bit more oil on top, and then your crumbs. Now, your crumb mixture can be to your own taste. With mushrooms, I happen to like thyme, so you can mix a little thyme in your breadcrumbs, or oregano, or dried oregano. I always have good oregano in the house. That's very good on mushrooms. A lot of things you could put in. And besides garlic and an herb, you can also, and very good with mushrooms, but also good with shrimp, which I'll tell you about in a second, fennel seed. Now, I crush my fennel seed a little bit in a mortar and pestle so that I'm not biting into big fennel seeds. The mushrooms don't cook very long. So whatever you put on top, it's going to, except the crumbs will get crunchy. And that's it. 20 minutes at 400 degrees. I do these lately in a ceramic pan. If you do them in a better conductive pan, or let's say a black iron skillet, which conducts pretty well, it may not take quite so long. You don't want the mushrooms to get all watery. You know, you want them to cook, but you don't want them to exude too much. This will depend on the mushrooms you put in the pan, too. Another breadcrumb thing that I do with some frequency is, now this is something that was always on the antipasto bar at a local restaurant that Bob and I used to go to because it was around the corner from where my friend Iris used to live. Unfortunately, Iris doesn't live on that block anymore. Well, not unfortunately. That's fortunate. What's unfortunate is that the restaurant is closed. But it was called Il Giardino, just a neighborhood Roman restaurant. And they had this very nice vegetable buffet in the evening. And one of the items was roasted peppers, but not whole roasted peppers that you peel and use that way. No, just quarter or make thirds out of your roasted pepper. Put them on a greased baking sheet. And inside each one, put a couple teaspoons or a tablespoon or so of breadcrumbs, which you try to spread it around a little bit. In fact, try to get your pieces of pepper so they lay relatively flat. And then again, you roast that 400 degrees, 450 degrees for maybe 20 minutes or so. If they get sort of tinged, is I can't think of the word, with char, with black, that's a good thing. If you want to leave them in longer, yes, so they get that way. Or even I wouldn't stick them under the broiler, because the breadcrumbs will burn.
Yeah, too small. Fire.
Right.
Fire.
But I am lately playing with my broiler to see what it is. I just the other day cooked sausages in the broiler, which I hadn't done. And I'm not used to doing it, so I overcooked them a little bit. But the broiler, you know, most residential stoves, even though I have this glamorous stove, then I don't have very good broilers. It's good enough to glaze something over. So the ultimate breadcrumb experience to me is just breadcrumbs for pasta. What do I mean? Cook up some spaghetti and top it with breadcrumbs that you've toasted in olive oil with, if you like them, anchovies, with a couple of anchovies. You put the anchovies into the hot oil and mush them down, and they will dissolve into the oil. Add a chopped clove of garlic or two. That's nice. And you now have, with breadcrumbs in the pan until they get toasty brown, you have a great pasta topping. And that's true cucina povera, poor people food, because in the old days, people didn't even have enough money or resources, to have grated cheese. Now, even if they raised sheep and made pecorino, they might not have been able to afford it themselves. They sold it. So and we're talking about impoverished Italy before World War II. But, you know, foodways stick around for a long time. So it's still, I know a lot of people who their favorite pasta is aglio olio e pangrattato, which means breadcrumbs.
Do they ever do it without anchovies?
Yeah, of course.
What else can you use?
Well, I mean, just breadcrumbs and oil are great, gotta say.
Marshall, for example,
you get some chopped parsley. I know you don't love garlic, but garlic is great, of course. Onion, you could do, how about doing minced onion? Getting it nice and soft and then throwing your breadcrumbs in the pan.
I'm just looking for a good anchovy replacement for.
Well, there's no replacement. There really is no replacement.
Okay.
I mean, and why? When if you just leave it out, it's delicious anyway. I mean, it's not going to be delicious to you if you had anchovies in it, but without the anchovy, just saute just breadcrumbs. I got to say, are delicious on top of spaghetti. Or any pasta. So, but this is here. This is sort of an ultimate use of the breadcrumbs. Is and I do roast peppers, usually even once a week. I've been getting really good red peppers. So you take a couple of nice sized roasted red peppers. You peel them, you core them, cut them into strips, and toss them in a small pan, a casserole that you can put in the oven. I have gratin dishes, actually. Toss it with some olive oil, capers if you have them. How about some chopped olives if you have them? You like anchovies, you can put an anchovy or two in this mixer, too, chopped up. And mix it all together, enough oil to grease everything. And then toss in some breadcrumbs, a few tablespoons of breadcrumbs. I like to toss in with the pepper, this is a pepper gratin, but then put more on top. Oiled breadcrumbs. You know, most recipes these days that I read tell you, you know, put in the breadcrumbs and then drizzle them with olive oil. I prefer to oil the crumbs before I put them on top. It gets a much more even distribution of the oil. All the crumbs get to benefit from the oil, and they all crisp up beautifully. So you do that. And you can make this ahead, even the morning to the night, if you want. It's an elaborate dish because you're going to combine this gratin of roasted peppers with fried eggs. My friend Cecilia invented this dish for her son Ettore when he was a boy. The boy is now in his mid-50s. I think he still dotes on this dish, but we all do because it's so delicious. So you take your gratin of peppers with the breadcrumbs, and when you're ready to serve, you stick that in a hot oven to heat it through. That's all you need to do. And in the meantime, you fry a few eggs sunny side up so that you get nice runny yolks and cooked whites. And you take your bowl of spaghetti and you toss it, I would say first with the eggs, because you want not only do you want to get the eggs well broken up, but you want those yolks to come in contact with the hot spaghetti and make like a sauce on top of the spaghetti. And then you toss in your pepper gratin. And we call this dish spaghetti di Ettore. That's Cecilia's son's name, is Ettore. And I don't know if they still serve it at the Agriturismo, but I still serve it every once in a while here at home. Because
it Casa Arturo.
And by the way, that's a dish that can take cheese if you want. Pardon me?
I said at Casa Arturo.
At Casa Arturo. Yeah, somebody asked me the other day, where do I go to eat pasta? Well, it was my doctor. He said, oh, where do you go to eat pasta? I said, I don't. You know, my rule is I only eat pasta at home. Unless I know, you know, so I know something. But in general, I don't order pasta in a restaurant. By the way, I think I mentioned this last week. It shocked me. But a bowl of pasta in a restaurant in Manhattan now costs $30 or more. And I was on the phone the other day with a friend of mine who manages a fancy restaurant on the Upper East Side. Fancy, not Italian restaurant, by the way. He calls it New American. But, of course, everybody's got to have pasta these days. He said, without $30 pasta, I'd be out of business. Meaning the markup on, I mean, people will pay $35 for whatever, And the markup on that is so great, as is on wine. I mean, you go into any Manhattan restaurant, you're not going to be able to get a glass of wine for less than $15. In some places, the cheapest bottle of wine is $100. So another reason to eat home. But then again, you have to cook if you want to eat home.
How joyful. I just want to say that when I learned a long time ago when carbonara was the thing, when I found out that you get the eggs in the bottom of the bowl and salt it and pepper it and then put the hot pasta in and it all worked beautifully, and then it was revelatory.
Yeah.
So
well, the heat of the pasta
was not something that was obvious from any. I mean, I had to be shown by an Italian, but
that's why carbonara is a little tricky.
Well, if you don't know that,
it's not the trickiest, but it's a little tricky because you want to cook the eggs, but you don't want them to be scrambled.
Right.
Exactly. So yeah, and
if you don't know
the one that's hard,
I'm just saying
the Roman pasta. By the way, it's funny. When I first started writing about food in another century, people disparaged food in Rome. They said, there was no Roman cuisine. I heard that so many times, there's no Roman cuisine. Well, there very much is a Roman cuisine. And right now, in 2024, the pastas of Rome are everywhere. And not just in restaurants, they're on the internet, they're on TikTok. And they are carbonara, the one you just mentioned, which is, strictly speaking, just pork product, either pancetta or guanciale, which is cheeks, with pecorino, cheese, and eggs, pepper, a lot of pepper. I like a lot of pepper. Then there's amatriciana, which is a red sauce, also with pork product, like, you know, guanciale or pancetta. Some people put a tiny bit of onion in. I do, but that's all it is the pork and the tomatoes, and again, the cheese of Rome is pecorino. And then there's cacio e pepe, which is the one that I have a lot of trouble doing. Cacio e pepe is nothing but pecorino, pasta cooking water, and pepper. And if you don't do it right,
it's horrible,
it comes
but if
out
you do it
all
right, it is,
stringy
it is
and clumpy.
It's sublime.
It's all strange. And I once got a lesson in this from a woman whose name I don't want to mention because I don't like her. but she, by the way, she did say something very clever once. She's an English woman who lives in splendor in the middle of historic Rome. And we said, you know, what got you here? She said, well, I came for love, but I stayed for pasta. Anyway, she taught me how to do this in the blender. And it worked once and has not since, so I don't want to clean the blender. I'd rather ruin it by hand. And then there's one that actually is my favorite, a la gricia. Now, gricia is a combination. Some people call it the white amatriciana because it's the pork product and pasta and cheese, no tomato. So, and that I do have a place in Rome. I don't know if it's still any good, but 3 years ago when I was there, it was great. I went back the next day, in fact, to have more gricia.
I did that once in Florence. It was so good. It was alli olio. It was so good that I just went the next day. I went for lunch, and then I went back for dinner for lunch. And it was moronic because, of course, there are all sorts of places, except that it was so good. And P.S.,
well,
it never has as good since.
One of the a few places I will go for a bowl of pasta is in my neighborhood. I was very skeptical of this place when it first opened. But they do make a very good cacio e pepe. And so I don't think it's anywhere near $30. I think it may be like $14, $15. I haven't been back for it in a while. They do a different pasta every day, and I wasn't thrilled with the pasta they'd selected that day for that day. I didn't think it really worked with the cacio e pepe that well. But then I went back. They have a retail, so it's called Pasta Louise. And I went back to their retail doctor's appointment across the street. And just to try, I bought a box of their fettuccine. Now, they make a flour and water pasta, no eggs. And you know what? It was sensational. Yeah. I mean, I cooked it at home and put my own sauce on it. But I, the pasta itself is a very high quality. Anyway.
Well,
no pasta today. No pasta today. We're trying to do a little down on the pasta. But what I do have today is I made a boneless leg of lamb yesterday, and I'm going to slice it paper thin and see what I can do with that.
And you can even sprinkle some breadcrumbs on. Yummy.
Well? I could.
Oh, yeah, capers.
I wouldn't slice it thin.
And breadcrumbs. By the
way,
and garlic. Oh, my goodness.
Looking at my I could do a whole book on breadcrumb cooking, but there is a recipe that I'm going to try again. It got eliminated from my last book, and I remember it very dearly. It's chunks of pork marinated in lemon juice and then cooked very, very slowly in the oven until it gets tender, and then you top it with flavored breadcrumbs and put it in a hot oven to get them crunchy. It was really good. All in one pan. What I like.
Sounds like a winner to me.
All right, everybody. Save your bread. Use your blender to make breadcrumbs. They keep. I buy what I call beige bread. It's not really a very heavy whole grain bread, but it is whole grain to a degree, and it makes very nice breadcrumbs.
All right, boss.
Okay.
All right. Thanks.
Have a great week, everyone.
You too. Thank you very much, Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, maverick, mensch, on Robin Hood Radio.